on KLYT. This is ABQ Connect.
Dr. Marshall Jordan joins us via phone in preparation for meeting actually tonight. We're recording this on Monday, but tonight at 7 o'clock at Faith Bible Church in Albuquerque, Moon at Central. It's the monthly meeting for the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. Dr. Jordan, thanks for taking the time.
Yes, a pleasure.
Well, we've been letting our audience know that you'll be talking about a biblical radiocarbon chronology for dating the Joseph famine and the Exodus. For those that have been hearing that, exactly what that means and why it needs to be addressed.
Yes, I've been interested in radiocarbon for a while because I was provoked the way the secular world uses some radiocarbon data to try to overthrow the historic record of Genesis. And so I became interested in radiocarbon and in dynastic Egypt, which is quite a conundrum to unravel. And radiocarbon has been attempted to help us understand Egyptian chronology. So that's where it all got started.
Okay, so a dynastic Egypt, for those hearing that, what does that mean?
Yeah, it generally means the beginning of the Old Kingdom with the building of the pyramids. Pharaoh Djoser built the first great pyramid, colossal pyramid, and it goes down through the middle in the New Kingdom. And it's basically quite a conundrum because the ancient Egyptian records are problematic. They list long lists of kings that may have served concurrently, and they're listed consecutively, and they start with mythological figures. And so there's quite a difficulty in discerning when things actually happened. And of course, that is compounded by the fact that the ancient Egyptians looked at history differently from us. They didn't really want to record what actually happened. They wanted to record what made the pharaoh look good and help him in the afterlife, so to speak. And so you can't really trust what they say on the temple writings and the hieroglyphs to be very accurate. And so recently, in 2010, Oxford University published a radiocarbon chronology for Egypt, for the dynasties, beginning with the Old Kingdom. And it's that chronology that bothered me because it extends before the flood and extends back to before the creation of the world according to Genesis. And so for that reason, I became interested. And about a year ago, I was able to publish a biblical calibration scale for radiocarbon dating.
Okay, so I'm actually hearing a couple things. When it comes to radiocarbon dating, then those that are saying the timeline is different than what you would say. Are there disagreements about how radiocarbon dating works?
Yeah, well, that's, of course, the big issue. You know, actually, radiocarbon dating has been a tremendous blessing to archaeology. But the problem is when you get to older dates, and I would say older than about 500 to 1000 BC, the technique doesn't work anymore because of uniformitarian assumptions. Basically, and we're going to have to talk about this tomorrow or tonight at the meeting, what radiocarbon dating is all about. But radioactive carbon is generated in the upper atmosphere by solar rays, and it deteriorates with a half-life of 5,730 years. So plants and animals have C14 because the radioactive carbon is in CO2, which plants fix with photosynthesis. So animals and plants are all in equilibrium with the atmospheric C14. But when the plant or animal dies, the C14 begins to decay away at a known half-life. This means you can estimate the age of an ancient carbon by how much C14 remains in it, in the tissues, if you know the starting amount. And that's where the problem occurs for older dates than about 1000 BC, is they don't know how much C14 was there to start with. And so they make assumptions that have implications regarding the history given in Genesis. Namely, it's inconsistent with that. So that's the topic we're going to be discussing.
All right. From a layman's explanation, and actually, as we homeschooled our kids, growing up when this argument came up. I mean, and this isn't a new argument as far as, you know, I could tell, because I remember I couldn't explain. I couldn't articulate it nearly as succinct as you have. But, you know, the thing that we used to say is, well, in order to use radiocarbon dating, essentially, you need to know how much carbon there was at the time of whatever it is you're trying to prove.
Exactly. I mean, the radiocarbon calibration is based upon a simple equation that has the amount of radiocarbon you find in an ancient carbon divided by the amount that was there to start with, and it deteriorates at a known rate given how long it's been. And so if you don't know how much is there to start with, you have no idea how old that ancient carbon is. And the assumption you make regarding how much was there to start with determines the age that you're going to get from radiocarbon dating.
Well, very good. Well, I love the tease. I'd hate to steal your thunder for tomorrow. Is there anything else you'd want to share prior to us putting a bow on this?
Well, I think I do have to say that the data for radiocarbon dating of ancient Egypt is very difficult to use because it's based on museum artifacts. And the museum artifacts were collected over the last 200 years, most of them before there was any radiocarbon dating. Radiocarbon dating was discovered the method was published by Willard Libby in 1948. He got the Nobel Prize for it. But all the museum specimens were collected earlier. And so they weren't collected in a fashion that would promote accurate radiocarbon dating. And so the data is all over the map. And that means that I am not totally able to use radiocarbon to prove who the Pharaoh of the Exodus is. It's a bit of a spoiler alert, Steve.
Okay.
Because I try real hard to do that, but am unable to do it. Now, I have ideas about who the Pharaoh of the Exodus and the Pharaoh who elevated Joseph from prison, who these men were. I have good ideas about it, but it's based not on radiocarbon so much as a historical scholarship. And we're going to talk about all that tonight.
Well, that'll be a great opportunity for anyone from students to 90, over 100, however old you are, if you're able to sit and consume the information that Dr. Marshall Jordan's prepared for you, you're absolutely invited. It's a free meeting that happens once a month, the third Tuesday of each month. It'll be tonight, 7 o'clock at Faith Bible Church in Albuquerque Central and Moon. And in addition to the content from Dr. Marshall Jordan, just a reminder that as a membership, a free membership to the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico includes quality speakers like you'll encounter tonight. There's books and DVDs and a members lending library. All the details are on the web at csfnm.org. That's for Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, csfnm.org. Dr. Jordan, thanks again for your time. And hopefully some of our listeners will take you up on your invite and see you there tonight.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. I really appreciate it. I give all glory to the Lord Jesus for his efforts and help in this topic, and we just hope to honor him by our discussion tonight. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And thank you for listening to ABQ Connect.